Hey, it's Darren Johnson, Weekly Newspaper Podcast, the podcast that is all about small town journalism, journalism in general, and then I mix in some college type stuff because I work also as a journalism instructor at a local college, which I'll talk about more in a little bit. Speaking of being a professor, here's a movie review. Saw a movie, I think it might have come out just before the pandemic, maybe like a year or two before, called The Professor. It's free on Prime, on Amazon. So if you have Amazon Prime, you get like a free streaming channel and you can watch a bunch of stuff on there. And it's with Johnny Depp. And I had avoided this movie. It seemed, I don't always watch movies in the professor genre. And my wife doesn't necessarily tend to like them. They're a little too inside baseball maybe sometimes. But I finally put it on and gave it a watch. And it was actually a pretty depressing movie. Very early into the movie, Johnny Depp, he's an English professor, of course. They often are English professors in movies because that's where writers come from, the English departments. And writers write movies, right? So he's an English professor, and very early in, he gets a diagnosis that he has inoperable cancer, and he's going to die in 6 months. All right, a little bit of a gimmick, but he's such a good actor, you know, the Amber Heard stuff aside, and, you know, in essence, he won that case with Amber Heard because he's such a good actor. It was just like one actor and another actor going to court, and he just was so charismatic that he won the day, let's say. Not that he maybe should have, but, you know, he won the court of public opinion. He won the room. Very charismatic. In any case, the movie that has gimmicks, but Depp, you know, being a masterclass actor, does a good job and pulls it off. And so we get sucked into this depressing world where his diagnosis makes him change everything. He no longer, you know, he'd been going along to get along. He'd had a life of compromise. He's an English professor at, you know, some middling college somewhere. And his wife, he doesn't really like him that much. They've kind of parted, and he has a relationship with his daughter that is a little bit, it's close at times, but it's aloof at other times. And his best friend is a university, he's a department chair or something like that. And then there's another person who works at the college who's cheating with Depp's wife in it. And, you know, and then there's, you know, his students. And after this diagnosis, he just changes everything. And they can't get rid of him because he has dirt on the person that would be in charge of getting rid of him at the college. You know, that's the person cheating with his wife. And he's misappropriated some funds, this person. So they can't fire him. But he totally changes his class around. He chases out the grade-grubbing students and says, just, you know, you're automatically getting a C. Get out of here if you're not going to take this course seriously. And it winds up with just maybe like a dozen students in the class, and he goes, smokes pot with them. He takes them to bars. He says weird things. He definitely crosses a lot of boundaries with the students. It's just a character study. And in the end, he tries to have closure to his relationship with his wife, his daughter, his department, all the different things. And he just drives off with a dog into the moonlight, and that's the end of the movie. And it's kind of depressing, but I'm at a point where I'm winding down a visiting professorship at a small college that's, you know, probably like a lot of small colleges. It has its politics, and it is a little sad leaving. Now, I didn't get a cancer diagnosis, you know, knock on wood, if there is wood around here. Does wood exist anymore? But I'm gonna miss it, you know, and I feel like sometimes it's just an unfair world, And I would stay at this college if it weren't, if the nature of my position wasn't visiting, and if there were avenues to reward people that put in a lot of good work, because I'd been running there not only journalism courses, but the school newspaper and the radio station. So, and made a lot of improvements during just 2 years. I added a podcast studio, for example, and automated the radio station, and made the school newspaper digital first instead of print first. And, you know, so really made some improvements at this place. And you can see where people start to, you know, it gets, it makes you, you know, question, like, is anyone out for you? You know, that type of thing. In any case, that is The Professor, a movie, and it might be worth watching. So go find it on Amazon. All right, so this is Weekly Newspaper Podcast, and the one thing I'm going to miss, you know, if I leave this particular college, I guess there's always a long shot chance to keep me for a third year, but the one thing I'm going to miss that I kind of liked the most, and something I hadn't done before, was running the campus radio station. And I had, you know, broad experience in audio and such. I had an online station for a while. I'd been around radio stations, but never had to really manage one. And that part has been, it's kind of like lit a fire under me a little bit. So now, even though this academic tenure is ending, I think I do want to keep doing something with radio. And you know, it's so hard to get a permit to open, to start a brand new radio station, an FCC permit, but I would like to do something in radio. So I don't know, I guess I'll write to other colleges in the area and say, hey, do you want to improve your radio station? You know, I'm available. And maybe do something in that regard. I went on the air for a good amount of time the other day at our campus radio station. We had a class, we had the radio class, and then a student normally shows up towards the end of the class and does a show after the class is over. We do the class in the radio studio and actually go on air. Well, the studio, I said, okay, you know, class was leaving. I put on a song and said, all right, you can go now, and I'll just wait for the student to come. And the student never arrived, so I don't know what was going on with the student, but I just kept, just stayed on the air until my next class, which wasn't, you know, for a couple of hours. So the class was about an hour and then a couple more hours. So I was on for a while and got to play songs that I hadn't played in, you know, in my time there at the radio station, and talk them up. And it's definitely a different experience going on FM radio and not knowing who the audience is, but knowing it's a live audience, and connecting with them in that way. So I would like to do something more in radio, I think, in the days ahead. A big story in the journalism world is, and I listened to another local journalism podcast, and they all were on one side of this, but I don't think they're on the side of public opinion. Sometimes, I hate to say this, but sometimes people who have a certain political bent can't see that they have this certain political bent. And, you know, and in this world, you get accused a lot of being either conservative or liberal if you don't toe a line. And I would say a lot of journalists, especially from, you know, maybe a certain generation, an older generation, they might be, they're just kind of toe the line Democrats, but they don't see it. They don't see it. And so there's a big story going around. An NPR staffer, longtime staffer, National Public Radio, wrote an op-ed for another publication saying how NPR has turned has lost its way, has lost its audience, and because it just became like, you know, like New York Times Online did during the Trump era, it just became one-sided, and it just, you know, used the same talking points that people of a certain political ideology, they're more like PR talking points than they are news talking points, espouse. And this, and then he eventually had to resign, you know, was suspended and resigned from NPR. And this local podcast I listened to, all the journalists on it were like, oh, that's awful. You know, he shouldn't have talked bad about his employer, and, you know, maybe this could have been handled internally. And, but maybe the person felt like they couldn't, you know, maybe the person did bring up the topic internally and said, hey, we're only catering to a small percent. And let's face it, you know, NPR relies heavily on donations. And maybe, you know, you're catering to the people that donate, the elite, to your radio station. And they might be more Democratic elite than Republican elite. You won't make, in this atmosphere, you won't get a lot of donations being down the middle. You'll get donations being one side or the other. So maybe they took that other tack, the opposite of like AM radio, which has a lot of conservative talk on it, or Fox News or something. It's like, hey, let's just take the opposite tack. You know, New York Times exploded in readership, and it's since kind of plateaued, but exploded during the Trump years because they would just shoehorn Trump into practically every article. You know, just, I would be amazed sometimes. I would read the New York Times, and I'd read an article that really had nothing to do with Trump whatsoever, but like paragraph 18, they would throw in a paragraph about how this applies to Trump. And it probably had to do somewhat with just like algorithms and what people were searching for. But it was pretty obvious that they were just shoehorning in Trump into a bunch of stories just to, you know, just to get more clicks. And radio probably was doing the same thing. And these aren't pro-Trump stories, obviously. They're, you know, it's like, hey, this is kind of a negative story. Let's put Trump in there somehow. Not to defend Trump. You know, sometimes if you just say anything somewhat moderate and reasonable, they think you're like a Trumpster or something. I never vote for Trump. Don't vote for Trump. Didn't vote for Trump. So enough, you know, enough of trying to castigate people just because they have a middle-of-the-road opinion. In any case, I read the post via that was made about NPR, and via Facebook, and I read all the Facebook comments, and really the Facebook comments were really reasonable, and they tended to agree with the author that said that, yeah, you know, maybe NPR did kind of lose its way. You know, even some people posted who were conservatives, and they said, yeah, I'm a little bit conservative, but I would listen to NPR because it, you know, it put the news out there, and sure, it had a little bit of a bent to it, but at least I felt like, you know, most of it was pretty good, it was pretty reasonable. But then I just stopped listening because it became just like a screed, you know, a left-wing screed. And I have to say, I don't like, as much as I like political talk, I don't like it when it has an agenda, either right or left. I just don't like it when I could tell they're just PR talking points. And definitely AM radio with like the Rush Limbaughs of the world and whoever is the successor to Rush Limbaugh, of course that went in a certain direction and stopped being at least broaching both sides of a topic, and it just became PR talking points and cheerleading for one ideology over another. And I can say that, you know, there are certain magazines. For some reason, I get mailed Mother Jones magazine, and I'm not going to read it. I might agree with it in essence, but so what? Well, I'm supposed to read stuff that I agree with? I don't care about reading stuff I agree with. I want someone to try to change my mind, but in a reasonable way, you know, like without it being PR talking points. Someone bought me a subscription because they loved it, and they thought they'd, you know, I would love it, to The Nation magazine. But it's all right. Yeah, I agree. You know, a lot of these things we need in this country, but I don't need just someone to reinforce my belief system. What's the point there? You're not really telling me anything new. The audience they're writing for already believes everything in there. So someone moderate is not going to pick up The Nation or somehow happen upon it. And I would say, like, the moderate person is the one, you know, the moderate people are the ones that matter. And moderate sometimes gets conflated with being wishy-washy or flaky or something like that. Now, moderate just means, like, all right, I've developed a sense of a viewpoint based on the mainstream of society and living in society. And I want to, you know, and I can be swayed. Moderates could be swayed that, hey, maybe gay marriage is okay, or maybe marijuana should be legalized. You know, moderates can be swayed over time. And it doesn't work if it's just pure PR talking points from a right or left ideology. It has to be people they kind of trust, and then they'll follow along. In any case, I think NPR kind of has gone that same route, where they're just trying to, everyone working there, you know, for the most part, believes a certain thing, and they get peer pressured into believing a certain thing, and they've lost all ability to say, hey, you know, 35% of the country does like Trump. Maybe there's a grain of something there that they like, and while overall Trump might not be palatable, maybe once in a while he's right on a topic, you know. So instead of just saying, you know, all one type of people are bad, all another type of people are good, maybe be a little bit more, be skeptical of the people around you too. And NPR probably went that way. I never listened to NPR. It's just a little too fluffy for me. I don't mind the local NPR affiliates and their local news. I think that's good. But the NPR itself is, and then stations get, you know, if they are an NPR station, everyone thinks they're just NPR. They don't think that they also have a local voice. So I don't know. I would rethink, if I were a public radio station, too bad there's not an alternative to NPR that might be a little bit more palatable. Maybe someone should start that. All right. Anyway, that was NPR and you know, radio. Radio is something I like too. So I don't know. Maybe I'll find a home there. A lot of the college radio stations around here, they don't have NPR. So most of them don't. And they're just kind of like these independent stations. And I kind of like that. So that's where that is. On the local newspaper front, the New York State government passed a newspaper sustainability act, and the key part of it is it will, and you know, there's my newspaper, my local newspaper has run some editorials saying support it. Our local assembly person is one of the key people that got it passed, and I had been lobbying with this person even before other papers glommed on and, you know, and took it over, and trying to get it passed. And it, it's, the main component of it is that there'll be a tax rebate for small newspapers and medium-sized newspapers that aren't national chain newspapers like Gannett, but they could be regional chain newspapers, will get a tax break of up to $25,000 per employee if they pay them $50,000. So now here's the incentive for newspapers to hire a bunch of $50,000 employees, because they know they'll get 50% back, $25,000 back if they hire, and $50,000 is probably, it's not the best in the world, but it's probably a fair wage for a, especially an upstate New York journalist. It's probably, you know, especially if they're either early in their career or they're late in their career. Now, if you're at the middle of your career, you know, that's the hard part. I'm probably in the second, you know, half of the final act, I guess, maybe, of my career. I don't know. But it's when you're in your 30s and such that you probably need a little bit more money, and 40s. When you're in your 20s, you probably can do the 50 grand thing. And after you've lived a life and your kids leave the nest, you probably could do the 50 grand thing. But in between, you need a little bit more than that. If you're going to buy a house, have kids, you know, have a car, all of that. So a lot of people in their 20s, they do journalism, and then they get pulled elsewhere, like PR or government or something like that. And if you're like me, you can kind of go back into it in your, once the kid leaves the nest in your late 40s, early 50s, you can go back into journalism full time, because you can figure out ways to, maybe your house is already almost paid for by then, and you've you don't have to pay college tuition anymore for your kid, and you know, maybe like things have settled down a little, and you could probably figure out other ways to have other revenue streams by the time you're in your 50s. So I guess newspapers will be able to hire a bunch of 20-somethings and a bunch of 50-somethings, maybe people who are downsized from other papers and are looking for a job. So they'll be able to hire those people with the Sustainability Act money. I don't know if it'll help me in any regard. I have to look at how the law is written. If I pay myself 50 grand, do I get 25 grand back from the state? You know, how does that work? Sounds a little shady, so I don't know. I guess it's, you know, I have to see how the law is written. Or does it mean I can hire someone separate and pay them 50 grand, and then eventually I know I'll get back 25 grand. But that said, it's a lot of paperwork, first off. Second, my paper is so small to the point where I'm just mostly hiring freelancers and people of that ilk. I don't know if I could even at this point handle a full-time $50,000 a year reporter. And also I'd have to put out $1,000 a week, which a lot of these micro newspapers, you know, that cover rural towns in upstate New York, that's still, you know, and you wouldn't get the 25 grand back until the end of the year. You know, that's kind of and you'd have to hope like your paperwork goes through and everything works out. So I don't think it'll help me. The people mostly pushing it are small chains, downstate New York and Albany region. And, you know, so some of the small chains, I think they'll benefit from it because they probably already have a bunch of employees that earn about 50 grand and they already have bookkeepers and, you know, and they have people, they have business structures that are more complex than a small rural newspaper. The thing that I think would work better for the, you know, truly small historic newspapers would be some kind of act that steers state advertising to them. And New York State buys tens of millions of dollars in advertising every year, but they buy it in billboards, and they buy it in Facebook and radio and TV. If they only allocated maybe 10% to historic newspapers, that would be a game changer for them. And if I did get, let's say I got another, I don't know, $1,000 an issue in state advertising, or $500 an issue in state advertising, that would mean a lot. You know, that would be several freelancers I could hire and, you know, and have them do real news and not just write like features. Right now, what I could pretty much afford are, because no one wants to write news anymore, you know, not at the freelance level. You pretty much need like a full-time dedicated person to be a beat person at this point. No one wants to do a beat for freelance money. It's just not interesting. You have to deal with people that are trying to spin you all the time. You know, when you do beats, I get like angry emails now and then if I write like just the most innocuous story about, hey, you know, there's a new event coming to town, and then I'll get a nasty email from someone who doesn't like that person, and they're in a position of power, and they're like, why did you write that story? It's like, well, there is an event coming to town. They have a permit, you know, and people are just so petty at the small town level. Well, if you're going to be a freelancer and earning like $50 a story, do you really want to deal with that headache? You know, do you want to deal with the headache of like someone who's believes that they're in a position of power at the local level, challenging every little thing you do? So you really need to pay properly to get someone to have that thick skin. I do it myself, but that's just because I'm hardened and have done this a million times. But I don't always have time to do news. So the types of people I can find are, you know, they're willing to do features. Hey, there's a new bagel shop in town, or there's a new, you know, there's, here's someone who's, you know, building something, or, you know, that's non-controversial in some way, or here's someone who has a special talent. Here's a local sports team won a championship. You know, you can find those types of people to write those stories that no one will really disagree with. But it's hard to find the people that will, and maybe this ties into my previous comments on like the polarization of media. You know, it's hard to find people that would do a beat in an affordable way. And even with, so, and the papers are so depleted to this point that it would be hard for me to say, okay, I'm going to maybe in good faith hire a $50,000 a year employee and some pay them $1,000 a week, and then I'll make sure at tax time everything is above board and I dotted all my T's and there's not going to be any gimmicks. It's not going to be like these student loan debacle things where, you know, people paid 10 years straight and they still can't get them forgiven because they missed a penny one day, you know, one year. You know, there's, you know, going to be some gimmick after all this. But if more advertising were coming in, instead of the state just maybe giving me $25,000 at the end of the year, I think that would help a lot more. It would be more, that would be truly sustainable because it's like, hey, we're probably going to get another $500 an issue. That will help, you know, maybe we could buy some more racks and move the paper out to areas that we haven't covered before and hire a freelancer in that area and, you know, maybe do things of that nature. Anyway, I guess it's a start and, you know, we'll see what happens, from there. But, you know, as far as the polarization of newspapers go, I've found that like right and left at the small town level, just there's so many people who just don't like facts. They don't like the facts. They don't. If you write something that you think is pretty straight and normal, you know, you go to a meeting and you find out something's happening and someone got a permit to do something and you write it and you get a few quotes and publish it. This event's happening. It got approval. These people say it's going to do this, this, and this. It's objective. It's written in the third person. No dog in the fight. You'll still get people at the local level that try to gaslight you and say, oh, no, you missed an important point in the story. And they're lying. You know, they're just trying to make you, they're just so petty, or they're just so deluded that they think that their worldview is the only worldview, when in fact that, you know, maybe the local paper is right. But then they go and tell, you know, they'll go and tell 20 of their friends, hey, you can't believe that paper. I can't believe what they did. And it happens on both sides, right and left. They both tend to do that with any news article that that has facts in it, because it's not their set of facts that they like. It somehow makes them feel bad. And so then they talk bad about a paper. Well, a paper needs the whole community to pay the $2 and buy it, or else it just won't exist after a while. And I'm finding that more and more at the local level. There are a good number of people that rely on the paper and understand objectivity and understand that, you know, that the paper is doing the best it can to present the facts it has and trying to be interesting. But I think there's a large contingent of people, and they're usually in positions of power. They run a large not-for-profit, or they run an important community group, or they are in office, or they want to run for office. They're, you know, one party or the next, who would rather the paper just be like this PR vehicle and not have any, not report anything interesting at all. But without the interesting stuff, it's not news. It's just fluff. You know, if there's not an interesting wrinkle to something, and without the journalist presenting it honestly, it's just a bunch of garbage. But I get that more and more at the local level. And then there's just, you know, large contingents of people that are just want to be know-nothings, and they don't want to read anything. And they'll just blame it on whatever, you know, liberal media or whatever. They don't want to pay the $2 or whatever it happens to be. So it gets more and more discouraging. We'll see what the solution is down the road. But I'll keep pushing ahead and trying new things, and I'm not going to quit anytime soon. All right, well, this was Weekly Newspaper Podcast, and you can hear more of these on weeklynewspaperpodcast.com. Or email me anytime at editor@journalandpress.com and editor@journalandpress.com. All right, talk to you later.